Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 71 at the very beginning, which is in on old single column, page 800. Okay, we're rolling forward with this block of papers. Recall that we were building up to this climax of complexity as we were ending last time. Remember, they gave us a very very informative, precise list of 12 elements to an integrous Supreme Court. What kind of individuals and what kind of specific issues they needed to very much be focused on most intently in order to maintain what we're building up to here, a system with an ever greater degree of conscious construct. It's not purely purely natural, right? There's a degree of unnaturalness, of artificial, of an art form, you know, ever more a fine art form. And so we've gone from family to clan to tribe to nation, and now we're going to directly address that final stage of the territorial state. And we'll get into the basics of that as we unpack the little preface here. Keep in mind how incredibly relevant what we're about to engage is. And this is where you're very much going to begin to see where the emergency lies. You know, why there is a paper 71 in the Urantia book, why there is a Urantia book. We've gotten to the point to where we're talking directly about what we have and what is in dire jeopardy of being lost. Right? The long, hard-fought result of the evolutionary process of a million years. A definitive state form of government. Okay, so let's see what we have here.
Paper 71, Development of the State. The state is a useful evolution of civilization. It represents society's net gain from the ravages and sufferings of war. Even statecraft is merely the accumulated technique for adjusting the competitive contest of force between the struggling tribes and nations.
And so, you know, when they say things like even statecraft, they're reminding you this is definitely part of an evolutionary process. As I was pointing out, a very hard-fought process. It represents society's net gain from the ravages and sufferings of war. But right there is a clue, again, about where war fits into this clan, tribe, nation, territorial state sequence. As we often stress, when you get to nationhood, you're now at the stage where you can begin to transition away from war being an indispensable element of the progress of your civilization. And that getting into definitive statehood is where you are very much efforting to leave that behind. And we all know there's an asterisk, you know, next to that statement on this planet, because we don't have the whole planet being very uniformly moved forward by a well-established, long-established planetary government, visible planetary government. So you're wanting to begin to definitively leave war behind, but on this planet, there's people where, you know, they've barely gotten to the stage where war is the definitive driving force, let alone being, you know, on the downslope on the other side of it. You know, they're still climbing up, in relationship to war. So it's a very complex situation on this planet. But nonetheless, it's important to understand, at least, in a theoretical mode, it's like, okay, let's set aside the other countries in the world for a second and just remind ourselves of what we're trying to be and what demands we have to place upon ourselves in order for that to be. And then we'll figure out how we have to compromise and adjust and whatnot to take into account all of the complexity of everyone else. Let's see here. Let's go to the second paragraph there.
The modern state is the institution which survived in the long struggle for group power. Superior power eventually prevailed, and it produced a creature of fact, the state, together with the moral myth of the absolute obligation of the citizen to live and die for the state. But the state is not of divine genesis. It was not even produced by volitionally intelligent human action. It is purely an evolutionary institution and was wholly automatic in origin.
Okay, so there you see them putting into context what I was saying at the very beginning. When you're just talking about getting into the beginnings of statehood, there still is a very limited amount, a very conscious, let's pull ourselves out of the evolutionary stream, at least, in terms of a moment of reflective thought and really try to conceive of, where we want to go. And you're still kind of just inexorably being moved along by the evolutionary process into the beginnings of statehood. As they're saying there, that, getting there into beginnings is purely an evolutionary institution, wholly automatic in origin. Okay, but it's important to remember that, since our personality is given to us by grace, and our encirclement in the Holy Spirit is given to us by grace, so the personality has a beginning domain to begin to actualize within. In that sense that's there by grace, that's quote-unquote natural, just that initial human quality. So, yes, it might be purely evolutionary institution, wholly automatic in origin, right? Automatic, just a product of the self. But there's that by grace personalized self, and oftentimes an unconscious exercising of the will, of that personality that is there. Okay, and so even if even when they say it's not even produced by volitionally intelligent human action. Yeah, I mean, in a very overt conscious way, But inescapably, there's some unconscious volitional action in the upper domain of the hourglass analogy of your mindful self. And as we when we get to statehood, that has to have come into play more, or you couldn't have gotten there. Right? You're not going to get this sophisticated by just predominantly a lower domain animal, fancy animal phenomenon. Right? There's some insight that's trickled into the darkness of your mind, right? And given you, a motivation to establish a greater resolve within yourself to have more integrity, so that there can be the potential for greater liberty. I mean, those sorts of things are in play. And so you don't want to, you don't want to totally, negate the personal, because of what they said there. You need to reflect on it carefully. Like, that's why I'm stressing it. When they say superior power eventually prevailed, statehood has a power that, tribalism doesn't. Okay? And so you're very much still in a, the energy facts of an evolutionary process. It might wins, when it's just an evolutionary give and take, that which is the most powerful, and in that sense the most effective, eventually wins the day. So, they're reminding you that you want to appreciate, despite the fact that we kind of stumbled into it in many ways unwittingly, there's a power there that is greater than any other thing that you can think of, because all you're going to think of is something that's back in the past, of your immediate line, or is somewhere else out there in our very broad, everything that's ever been is already still in existence, sort of world. Right? There isn't anything else out there that has greater innate power to it, that is better in that sense. It should be adopted because it has greater latent energy.
Well, thinking about the emergency, what I see is common power in and of itself is commonly thought of, or people often describe it as a negative, mm-hmm. not as a positive.
Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Right.
Right. Yeah. And to the point where it's just assumed that a powerful country, for instance, there's a negative aspect to having, because they have power. Mm-hmm. Or if a person, let's say he's the CEO of a company, which puts him in a position of power over others, he's automatically, just the fact that he's achieved a position of power, there's something suspicious about that person.
Yeah. All right. So let's extrapolate that. So then if power is innately evil, well, let's look for the greatest evil then in finite existence. The greatest power is the Almighty Supreme. So that must be the greatest evil then, right? Whoops. I seem to have reduced this initial assumption to an absurdity. Right? I mean, obviously, no. See, the fact that there is an Almighty Supreme, that isn't just the delusions of superstitious primitive people, that there's an Almighty. See, that's a direct challenge to all those unfortunate, fuzzy, favoring their unity consciousness individuals that have convinced themselves that power is bad. Right? That, you know, think about where that basically comes. I mean, we'll get to this in a little bit here. If you favor your unity consciousness, individuality is, you know, at least suspect. You know, if not immediately put in the dichotomy, and it's like, you know, the more individuated it is, the worse it is, you know, and it's, you know, fuzzy is good and individuated is bad. Well, power is a concentration. You know, if you're going to purpose energy, you're going to have power, right? It's directed, right? It's focused. So, I mean, you know, they're not thinking about it in those technical terms, but, you know, just that simple fact is one of the reasons why they begin to feel ill at ease about power, because it's concentrated, you know, and they've decided that goodness is only, the formless ocean, right, the continuumness. And to be ultimately good is to melt as a drop of water into that ocean of goodness. And so, it's our failure to have a philosophic knowledge of ourself, know thyself, right? Those ancient Greek philosophers, to recognize what your genetic temperament is, what your tendencies are innately, and what's positive about that, what's negative about that, as it goes forward, where, you know, why it's going to be going to need to be tempered, where it's going to need to be tempered, when it's going to need to be tempered, you know, to have that big picture that you see yourself in, so that you can begin to master yourself, purpose yourself well. You know, obviously, in contrast to Caligastia telling us, no, you're innately perfectly purposed. Just let her rip. Pour the gasoline in, you know? Power is, you know, power is so not bad, right, that it meets eye to eye with personality in a power personality synthesis. It's of the exact same high quality. I mean, energy pattern and spirit pattern, in the hand of the pattern giver, the pattern bestower, the first source and center, aren't two patterns, they're one pattern. They're obviously of like quality. You know? Again, it's sort of an unrecognized negative consequence of this denigration of power is you're going to not only push away power, you're going to push away personality. Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, I think a lot of that in, over the last 50 or 100 years has to do with the storytellers, you know, whether they're telling their stories in, you know, on TV or on in books or whatever, where it's more interesting to read stories about, you know, the underdog being suppressed by you know, the ruler or whatever it is, power, so that what's grown up over time is people's impression subliminally, in a way, that it's a bad thing.
Yep.
Not really reflectively thinking about it, but because it's just been conditioned that way to a certain degree.
Absolutely.
I know my kids, you know, you can't tell them anything about that because they just don't have that depth of experience to be able to see. And you know, when they read a lot of history, a lot of it is centered around, you know, the good guy, bad guy situation. The bad guy is usually the one who has the power, so to speak, in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, understand power generation, you can see why, you know, the storytellers, I'll just say that, because there's all different kinds, have sort of conditioned us to that.
Yeah, and see, the thing that you can know in that regard is, that goes all the way back to the beginning of significant reflective thinking with the ancient Greeks. One of the very first things that the first Greek philosophers bemoaned was the storytellers. Just like you just did. Okay? You just, you know, rewrote, you know, the words of Plato and you didn't recognize that you had, you know.
I think I had read it earlier.
But it's, see, it's just, it's there. That fact that humans don't have drama. Animals have drama. So if you're going to write drama, you can't have humans. They have to be fancy animals all wrapped around the axle in order to have a drama story. Humans, you know, don't get themselves into those messes. Humans have wisdom, insight, and foresight, and you know, and don't walk into the La Brea tar pits. You know, but animals do, and you can write a whole soap opera about what happens when you walk into the La Brea tar pits as a fancy animal. Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about unfortunate, you know, education through these, listening to these stories. You know, you remember in paper 34, the minds of ignorant, mistaught, or unfortunately over-conscientious persons. Right? We have a lot of ignorant, mistaught, or unfortunately over-conscientious persons, you know, who get all bent out of shape over trivialities of no consequence. Right, right.
And trivialities in someone else's life.
Ah, yes, right. It's like, right, so it's right there in the book, you know. They know, you know, they keep telling us what we need to know about why we got into the state that we're in that motivated a super universe to send us a revelation. And we got to start working on correcting that. You know, we can't have so many ignorant people. We can't have so many mistaught people. And we have to rise above our animal tendencies of being offended at everything, or faking offense, you know, for your own gain, you know, and machinations. Anyway, let's go. So back to the preface here, paper 71. So the other thing that they're bringing in that preface is very important, that's transitioning as you go from mere nation to territorial state is, see, up to that point, whether it's clan, tribe, nation, it's fundamentally a group of people only. We pointed out that, you know, you're beginning to transition. A nation is a people of a place. Okay, but it's a people of a place. You know, to say India, you know, is really technically as a word to point to a group of people, you know, that are in the Indus Valley region, okay? It's not to name a country. It's not to name what's inside of some boundary line drawn on the globe, right? That word, that IA suffix is naming a people. So up to this point, see, there hasn't been enough abstract thinking ability to really go beyond the end of your nose. You know, it's all really still just you, the people. It's bigger and bigger groupings, yes, but it's just the people. Now you're going to abstract the government and the territory from the people, right? And you're going to have this territory and government abstracted from the people. That's the state. And then you're going to have citizens of that state. See, we now have the word citizen in play. All right? So you've abstracted, and you have this this territory, this place. Right? And then whoever has put themselves into cooperative subordination to the government of that place is a citizen of that place. You can see how you've flipped it around, you know, to something that's just purely people and no place at all. So now you have technically you have the place first, and then you're stepping into that place, okay, and assuming certain responsibilities that that place demands. Like one day you're going to wake up on the first mansion world. You're going to step into a place, and you have to assume all the responsibilities of conforming to that place. You know, and when you say, I don't like it like this, they'll say, oh, you poor boopsie. It doesn't matter if you don't like it. This is the way it is. You conform, ultimately, you'll go to iniquity and you'll cease to exist.
Of course, coming from here, we're probably going to like it. No.
For some reason, Lucifer didn't.
Yeah, he was screwed up.
You know, and he convinced a whole bunch of angels, right? Right? It wasn't just Lucifer, right?
Not right. The only one.
Lots and lots and lots of other celestial beings, you know, could be, Lucifer could sow discontent in their minds. Discontent, resistance, rebellion, right? Sedition. Right? It's just because you're in quote unquote heaven, right, of human lore, doesn't change the fact that you can rationalize anything. You can rationalize that what we would think, you could never think of negatively. No, you can always rationalize it negatively when you're lowly like we are, or like Lucifer, like a Lananadek. You can look at the most wonderful thing and flip it around in your mind and see it as a horrid oppression on your false liberty. Right. You know, how dare you tell me that I've got to do this in this way? Who are you to make up these rules, these arbitrary rules, you foreign potentate? Right. See, it's all there. See, it's just notched up into a fancier place and fancier doings, but the same dynamic is there. And you don't leave the local system until that dynamic is not there anymore. You've humbled yourself. Right? It's not that, it's not like you're going into the Borg. It's not like resistance is futile. You must comply. Okay? But you're heading towards absolute law that doesn't bend one bit. Right? The Isle of Paradise has no, gray to it. There's no wiggle room. It's absolute law. Yeah? And you have to conform to it absolutely. Right? They don't even let you into the central universe unless you have perfection of purpose. Right? And you can dot every I without fail.
By the time you get to that point, you come about it differently. It's not like here where you're struggling with the good and bad side of you like that. You evolve to a whole different state.
Right. Like I said, you don't get out of the local system until it's not like that anymore.
You don't even get to the next.
They don't let you to the, a sub-satellite of Adentia, when you're still in that mode.
Right.
Right.
Definitely achievable.
Yeah, yeah. And it's achievable in a relatively short span of time, just a little bit of ascension, a little bit of evolution upward, and you've left that behind. And you've got this whole delightful journey up from that point without that, you know, without the analogy of on this shoulder is the little white angel and on this shoulder is the little red devil, right?
So I like the word citizen.
Yeah.
And being a responsible one. And we'll be a citizen all the way.
All the way.
And we'll be responsible and listening to authority. And I just love that. So much.
Yeah. See, you could see. That's what I'm saying. This is preparing you to get to statehood. Is preparing you finally in direct terms for your ascension career, because you know state. The root of the word state is to stand. Right. The domain on high stands. It just is. And you enter into it as a citizen. You learn precisely what the requirements are of a citizen at that level. And you delight in being able to achieve that, to use your free will to function well in that system that is pre-established and designed. If you conform to it well, it is the best system that could be for you at that level. Why would you not want to conform to it?
Yeah, and same with conforming to it here. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, you listen to authority because they know better than you because of all the experience. And so.
Right, and we all know the only problem with that is when you're down in the, still in the local system, sometimes the authorities.
But that's true too.
That's why all of the angels. The angels know that they don't have that much ability to have it, have the law written in their hearts, you might say. They're dependent upon their superiors to lead them well. They know that. And so, they have a tendency, it's like, well, that seems a little bit off to me, but good grief. I mean, it's not like I have an adjuster or something. I better just follow what the system sovereign is saying. But once you get past the vicissitudes of the local system level, right, you can trust your superiors implicitly.
And now, since Jesus took over as supreme master son, there is you can trust even the people in the local, because there's not going to be any rebellions that won't automatically.
Some speculate that there might not be, but
so I wouldn't worry about it.
They all wonder, but at least for us it's not nothing to worry about. Nothing's going to you when you get up to the mansion worlds. You can trust everything's integrous, right? You don't have another rebellion in a local system. It happens only once, right? Right. So, we can speculate about, well, what if you're in that, local system over there? Okay, but here, so for your own ascension, right? The only time when you got to be a little bit more on your toes, you might say, is when you're here, okay? But you can, you can take a deep breath and really kind of lean a little bit more on the system up there. With just again a little caveat, there's you're still in a mix on, especially the first and second mansion worlds, with individuals who might be very clever and silver-tongued, and are themselves as an individual going towards iniquity, and you might not want to, hit yourself. To them, this is my best friend. I'll just follow them wherever they go. You do have to be discriminating that way.
We'll see through them easily.
But, hopefully, coming from our world, that won't be such an issue. But nonetheless, you don't work on getting this definitive internal integrity just because. You don't want to fall victim to someone going to iniquity. You do it because you know it's what you need to do. I mean, just think of it in purely selfish terms. Fundamentally, the reason you want to do this is you want to be able to get onto the Isle of Paradise someday, don't you? If you're not buttoned down perfectly, you're not going to get on the Isle of Paradise. So, I mean, it's purely an individual thing when all is said and done. Either you're integrous so that you can do what you ultimately want to do, be able to stand in the presence of the Universal Father and worship to your heart's content. You know, either you have that integrity or you don't. And if you don't, you're not going to get to do that worship thing, no matter how much you want to do it.
What does worship mean?
Well, put yourself in sublime communion with the presence of the Father. Let's just say it that way.
About the worship, it's not like we only worship in that highest way and everything else is not worship at all. I mean, we start here as best we can.
Sure.
And then there we'll know what, you know, the ultimate worship is, but it's not like we're going to wait to Paris.
But again, the whole point is not to really understand worship right now, but to understand the prerequisites. Like I say, you know, right now we're trying to understand law, right? You know, and it starts out with a state that has laws. You know, remember, we finally have gotten, we can abstract those regulations from the people too, right? And they aren't just the internalized mores. We've abstracted those out too as law. And so, see, that's the whole point of the state. It's you know, I mean, they said that it's the state is not of divine genesis. Yes, it's not of divine genesis. It's not like beings come down from on high and set it all up and then just plug us into it. Okay. But it is the manifestation of statehood is the manifestation of the essence of what is on high. There are laws apart from the creatures. There is a government apart from the creatures. You know, and there are definitely worlds apart from the creatures. You know, and you go into the state of the first mansion world, the state of the second mansion world. Right? A billion states that you have to conform to in the central universe, one by one. You know, a totally different government on a totally different world, right? You know, with laws specific to that world, distinct from the laws on the other billion minus one.
I can't even imagine.
It's just so in
different worlds, let alone a billion.
It's right. Mind-boggling. Right. Okay, so citizens, right? See, so when you talk about cosmic citizens, see, that's why they use that expression, cosmic citizen, right? Because of what we just, you know, what I've just explained about what kind of a system we have now and how it's like what's on high.
It is kind of curious how they, this is the one thing that happens in the collective that's close of kin to our own state of grace that we get without volition. Our own grace.
Mm-hmm.
The individual grace.
Yep.
That they have to boot up with. Looks like on a planetary scale, it has to just be booted up, you know, in this evolutionary
mode. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Let's just, for one moment, just touch upon that. So often, when we use the word grace, we are just focusing on an individual, you know, ourselves, for instance, and the grace that's bestowed upon us. But remember, there's a grace afoot in the external world too. You know, you walk in grace. There's the outer life of grace and the inner life of grace. And the fact that we progress in spite of ourselves, that, you know, that there is an inexorable evolutionary process that we exist in. Right? That's grace. Getting ourselves to not bias the word grace to God, just God the Father. It's just as much grace coming from God the Mother as from God the Father.
Back to yep. the point about the storytellers, just, you know, in a small defense of them, it's not like we've ever had good authority experiences on this point. I mean, it's all the stories, the bad stories of power and authority come from bad experiences.
Yeah. No, it's starting 200,000 years ago with the Prince of Staff.
we're not just making that up and running with it.
And then even though a lot of the immediacy of the Prince's Staff stuff got lost, because it was so long ago, it got reinforced and rebooted in everyone's minds with Adam and Eve. And so our sort of mythology, like you're saying, that kind of goes back to the mists of time, it's always been, that power corrupts sort of a thing. It's because the rebellion and the default got blurred together in the mythology, and that is the mists of time of our mythology. It's hard for us to not think that way, but that's the challenge of being an Agendonter, to recognize the truth of reality despite all the bad examples that are paraded in front of us, past and present. Okay? That's the challenge. You have to know in spite of all that. Okay, so, remember like I said, they're just initially talking about getting us to the beginning of statehood, and so look at the title of section one here.
One, the embryonic state. The state is a territorial social regulative organization, and the strongest, most efficient, and enduring state is composed of a single nation whose people have a common language, mores, and institutions.
Oh dear, first paragraph. And we already know why the book is in my lap. Right, so you see that as I was saying, the state is, you've abstracted the territory and the government, right, from the people. It's the territorial social regulative organization. Okay, so what is it, what are some of the fundamental elements of an integrous state? Right, in the strongest and most efficient and enduring state is composed of a single nation. Right, when you try to make a state out of multiple nations, it's complicated. It's not saying it's doomed to failure. You can, if it's well constructed, it can begin that way and eventually evolve into one nation. But it does need to eventually evolve into one nation. And anything that's going on in a state that has a tendency, especially willfully, to de-individuate either have multiple nations or, of course, in our case, what's going to happen, we had a one nation under God, so when you go backwards, you end up with just a bunch of tribes again, pre-nation. That's going to be, your statehood is only going to last for a very short span of time. When it's fundamentally tribalism, right? It's all going to fall apart. They're pointing out the main reasons why. Because you're not going to have a common language. You're not going to have common mores. You're not going to have common institutions. Right? Think about how many things around you are, you know, going in 180 degrees to what they should be. How many people are calling for, or how much we've allowed for alternative institutions, you know, a different type of bank, a different type of school, a day old, you know, mores. It's like, well, you know, we do it this way, and, you know, and we should be allowed to do it. And, you know, and we speak this language, not that one. No, right? That multiculturalism, right? So, you know, that's how you, how we sum up that right there, right? Multiculturalism destroys a state. It's the fundamental thing that destroys a state. Like, it's in the very first paragraph, you know, and it's one of the most intriguing notions to spiritually conscious people alive today.
Oh, in another part, they do say that the United States is an example of, you know, it's held together by law, but it is an example of multiculturalism, various different things that go on, and they exist all in one. Different religions, different races, so on and so forth.
Right.
And they, you know, the reason they do exist in a situation like this is because of the, you know, the central laws that keep them together, so to speak.
Right. You can have different religions. Notice that's not in the list. You can have different races, but you can't have different languages. You can't have different mores, right, and different institutions.
Well, then Europe's in trouble.
Yeah, of course. Right, I mean, that's the fallacy of the European Union, right? I mean, you know, in trying to create a constitution for the European Union, mm-hmm. where there's a paragraph in the constitution for each person in Europe, because they have their own language, their own mores, and their own institutions. Right, it's just absurd. It's delusional. Yeah.
One of the strengths about the United States, American language, English, is it because it borrows from so many other languages. Yeah. I mean, there's so many terms and things that are expressed by other languages. It just, when they're unique kind of things that need to be expressed, then it borrows from those other languages and keeps those things and moves on as our language.
Right there, you see the answer to this. It's like, well, how can you have a common language? It's not by force, you know, where it's my language, not your language. No, you create our language. And then that's the common language, a polyglot language. Right? Like English. Right?
Say Watson.
See? That's, right, I mean, see, you can see, you know, we already have experientially discovered how you get to this, you know, when you just initially, it's like, how in the world are you going to get, you know, one language? Well, it's because you melt them together into one tongue.
We have fewer dialects and differences in language in the United States than they do in the small area of Great Britain.
Yeah.
We're right. Much more.
Right, because, you know, we all know, like, you know, like we were just talking about, you go to Europe, and, you know, for most of their history, this little burg, you know, was an island universe, and they hated people, you know, that were literally, you could throw a stone to the next little burg, you know, but it was like it was in another universe, you know, and so, you know, it was so broken up into tiny little clan enclaves, you know, yeah, so... Right, so just, you know, it's right there, right up front. You hardly need to say anything else about what fundamentally is going astray in this state. And you notice the other thing, you know, you were kind of bringing it up. We're the United States. We have 50 states. All into a, you know, put inside of an encompassing state. That's another way that you can resolve some of these. When they start say single nation, common language, more institutions, it's like, wow, how am I going to melt away all diversity? No, you're not going to melt away all diversity, but you need to get creative and how to use statehood in a system that will allow for diversity. You know, like maybe this state is, we're going to form this state because that religion really kind of needs a state all by itself. You know, we all know that some of the states got started that way. those things that aren't on that list that, you know, you can't have multiple religions there or something like that. No, well, then if you're going to have multiple religions, you need to have some sort of a more complicated system, stable still, that allows for that diversity. But everyone's got to speak the same language. Okay. And again, you know, it's like you come in with lots of different mores. Well, you need to blend them together into a melting pot more system, right? It can't be, you know, these mores in this little region and these mores, no. It has to melt together into one more complex, common more system that everyone agrees to. And one little point there I just thought of as I was saying that, notice how it's going to be important to separate mores from religions. You know, that's one of the places we struggle with freedom of a religion. It isn't actually religion that these people are wanting. You know, it's a separate more system. You know, that's a problem when you haven't separated the social from the spiritual. Okay, let's see what else they give us here.
The early states were small and were all the result of conquest. They did not originate in voluntary associations. Many were founded by conquering nomads who would swoop down on peaceful herders or settled agriculturalists to overpower and enslave them. Such states resulting from conquest were, perforce, stratified. Classes were inevitable, and class struggles have ever been selective.
Okay, so what are they getting at there? Well, first of all, you can tell that you're in definitely getting the concept of states started in this evolutionary process. A lot of it just happens by force. Might is right, quote unquote. Right? It's inescapable. That's the way it works. And they're reminding you of that just the way they end that final sentence. It's like, have ever been selective. Oh, in other words, like natural selection, right? It's an evolutionary process, right? The survival of the fittest, right? What did they say in the very beginning about the power, right? Survival of the fittest by the exercise of power. The more powerful animal wins.
Sometimes the more clever one.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a power, too. Okay. That's a mental power.
I guess defining power.
It's not, yeah, just not just physical power. Right? Remember, power is purposed energy. There's three types of energy. Physical energy, mental energy, spirit energy. Okay.
Kind of like the pandas
miter. Exactly. Right, you're getting it. Right, see, so that's another thing about power. And you also see, so think about the they mentioned one of the four indispensables to the progress of early civilization, war. That was right up front. Here is slavery. And social classes. See? That's why they're reminding you of how very much this is part of that beginning process. You know, it's not like statehood, embryonic states are only on the other side when you've left the four initial indispensables behind. Okay? Very advanced states, yes, okay, but not embryonic ones. You're very much still in the slavery war, social classes. And so...
Slavery.
What was that?
I think you're talking about human slavery or slavery to debt and things like that, or just...
Here it's literally human slavery. They, you know, the peaceful people, you know, their peaceful life is disrupted and they're turned into slaves.
But there's a twist here.
Yep.
Because of these conquering nomads.
Yep.
They're like the backwards people are coming and taking the top place in the society.
Right, and so that reminds you a little something there. You know, this whole bit of going from hunter to herder to farmer. You know, what you're noticing is like, well, wait a minute, you got the herders and the farmers here, but. As you go from hunter to herder to farmer, there's this tendency to become very pacific. And then, so you can't drop your guard, right? You may not be in an offensive mode as a farmer like you were as a hunter, but you better be in just as definitive a defensive mode as a farmer as you were in offensive mode as a hunter.
Right.
You'll be overcome by the baser orders of humanity, and all of your wonderful structure that you've built up will be erased. They'll burn every stick, and there won't be any sign of all those thousands of years of effort. It'll all be gone.
Right. The pioneers carried guns at all times.
Yeah.
The guys always had a gun on them.
In the movies.
It sounded so cool to me.
But, you know, the point is, regardless of how much aggrandizement there is in movies and stuff, you know, the point is that you had to be ready to defend yourself if you're going out in the middle of uncivilized territory. Okay? You were going to try to project civilization out into uncivilized territory. It's exactly what we're talking about.
It's rugged.
Yeah, you have to, you know, you can't think that, well, because I want to be civilized, everyone else is going to want the same thing. No, these conquering nomads, you know, could care less.
It's because you're peaceful and not powerful.
Yeah.
You
could be sitting ducks.
Yep. So.
Rome is the light. The horror is darkness.
So, you know, we all kind of basically know these things when you think about it, but you want to note what the revelators are selecting to emphasize, right? They're trying to give you the basic elements that you don't want to lose sight of, you know, or your state will evaporate on you, right? If you don't keep all these things clearly in mind. Okay, so now they're going to give us a little bit more specific details about these early stages and kind of what you're trying to pull out of and what you're trying to move into to make this transition to statehood.
The northern tribes of the American red men never attained real statehood. They never progressed beyond a loose confederation of tribes, a very primitive form of state. Their nearest approach was the Iroquois Federation, but this group of six nations never quite functioned as a state, and failed to survive because of the absence of certain essentials to modern national life, such as...
Okay, it's a combination, you know, because he said up front, you know, an enduring state is composed of a single nation. I mean, you have to talk about both nation and state at the same time. You know, they're like they pointed out there, you can have a loose confederation of tribes, and that's kind of, sort of, okay, a quasi-state, right? But not going to have any stability or enduring nature to it. So you have a mixture in thinking about, you know, both being definitively a nation and then this additional abstraction of a state.
If I'm not mistaken, this Iroquois
Iroquois Federation.
Federation occurred in response to the pressure that they were feeling from the white settlers.
No, actually, no. It was
happening before
that. Yeah, so let me get a little bit up front then about, the Iroquois, they begin basically in upstate New York. Okay, so all around the lakes there in New York. And quite a ways back, before white men. What initiated it was, this very problematic tendency that zealous red man had is constantly warring amongst the tribes, and they were all killing each other off. And the Iroquois grouping here was, a very definitive example of an individual having the leadership qualities to stand up in the midst of the chaos of everyone killing each other all the time and not being able to think of anything else to do with their lives, and getting them to come together in peace. So it was in response to the ravages of war that they did this with the help of, a definitive leader, the great peacemaker, to lead them across the threshold. And the interesting thing that the revelators do here is calling them the Iroquois Federation rather than the Iroquois Confederation. They're trying to point out that there's something a little bit more profound there, that warrants the word federation instead of merely confederation. So that's an interesting little tweak that they're doing there.
What's the con part then?
Well, it's whether or not you think you've got all of the spiritual juices on your level and you can just work there, or if what's going to really bring you together, the essence of the potential for association, is it on your level, at eye level, or is it above you? If you know it's above you and you're all going to together reach up to that potential for association and hold on to that above you, the unity is above you, and the associativity will manifest down below. If you're doing that, you have a federation. If you believe it's in the plane, you have a confederation. See, the federal, that's faith, the word faith. The thing that you're taking a hold of with your faith grasped, with confederation, you're saying it's with you. The con means with. Federation is like, no, it's not with me. It's not at eye level. It's above me. And I need to reach up with the upward faith grasp. We all do, and take a hold of that. Through that common grip of unity, we will be associated.
So that leader had that vision.
Right. See that? They're pointing out that there was enough of a vertical inspiration there that people were really reaching up and not horizontally, kind of delusionally horizontally. Remember, Lucifer said, oh no, we're going to have a confederation. Because he thought the unity was in the plane. Right? We're all innately divine.
Like I said, he was an idiot.
And they, I was going to get to it later, but let me just get a couple things. I mean, so they started out, many centuries back, and quite localized, and they didn't begin to push south and west. The Atlantic coast was held pretty definitively by others, but they did push, all the way down into Kentucky and Virginia, and westward all the way over to Illinois and Michigan. They were. There was some definite energy there, and it was starting to, form something quite significant. And they'll comment on it, what became of that here in a second. But that's what they're referring to. They often bring up the Iroquois because it's, you know, anyone who's studied, you know, the early American history knows there's a you know, the Iroquois Federation played a significant role in the development of our country and the thoughts of the founding fathers.
Yeah. But this group of six nations never quite functioned as a state and failed to survive because of the absence of certain essentials to modern national life, such as 1, acquirement and inheritance of private property.
Good, readable.
2, cities plus agriculture and industry. 3, helpful domestic animals. 4, practical family organization. These red men clung to the mother family and nephew inheritance. 5, definite territory. 6, a strong executive head. 7, enslavement of captives. They either adopted or massacred them. 8, decisive conquests.
Okay, so let, you know, we won't go into all the science of all 8 points there, but you know, let's just touch on a few things. Notice that one of the reasons that this failed is they failed to definitively have what we saw way back is the inescapable, indispensable beginning of civilization of any significant quality, and that's slavery. You know, remember what it said back there? Slavery was an indispensable link in the chain of human civilization. It was the bridge over which society passed from chaos and indolence to order and civilized activities. Right? That very harsh fact that slavery and only slavery can actually leverage you, you know, into the beginning of the process. That's a very harsh element, you know, a rugged truth of the fifth epical revelation. So the fact that they seem to be doing this very advanced thing of not having slaves, like, no, that's they're doomed to fail because of that. You know, I told you that they did start expanding. Yep, okay.
I just keep thinking about how that growth potential came, that order came out of something that we just, for the most part on this planet, have this huge black label for war. And we couldn't go forward without slavery. We couldn't go forward without those things, so...
Yeah, and it's just, you know, again, you know, we were talking about power, see, the energy, you know, this evolutionary process. I mean, you're not going to have some progressing system, energetic system, system of energy with zero voltage applied to it. There has to be these differentials, these contrasts. That's what powers its progress. Pain and suffering are essential to progressive evolution. Right?
I'm guessing that they didn't enslave, not because they weren't inclined to, but because they didn't have...
Yes.
They didn't have a race of people that would readily accept slavery.
Well, there's a number of things. I mean, let's go and pick.
They had no agriculture and industry.
Yeah. I mean, see, you know, we all know we just read about the whole thing from hunter to herder to farmer, right? I mean, right, and you need slaves, you know, getting all the way to agriculture. Well, they haven't gotten there. They're, you know, a lot of them are literally nomadic people still. You know, those northern red men.
Yeah. It seems to me that number 8, the enslavement of captives, relates to number 1
7.
In the sense that acquirement of private property. and as such, slaves were private property of, say, in Rome. They were property of the Lord.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was kind of just getting, you know, trying to bring out how, you know, a number of these things see work together. I mean, it's not like, you know, each of them stands independent. It's a system, you know, and they needed to change the whole system of these eight to a different system. You can't really change one without the other. I mean, think about the things that, you know, besides slavery, war, social classes. What are some other key things that we've read about that are part of this, getting this going? Private property, right? They had a whole section on it. That's extremely important. Nothing gets going until you have the concept of private property. And obviously you can't have slaves if you don't have the concept of private property, in any effective way.
Did you have more to that point, though?
A little bit, in the sense that, you know, enslavement of captives, I mean, are we, in the way that we see this is basically the physical enslavement of a group of people to work for you. But does this also talk about other categories of enslavement? As of stuff today, we know people can be enslaved financially. Mentally.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we've all this, you know, we've read in the recent past, you know, we've gone through a lot of those details, see, about, and they've brought up, yes, I mean, you leave literal bodily, you know, enslavement behind in the very early stages of the progress of civilization. That's only indispensable at the very beginning. And then it needs to be left behind. But like you're pointing out, it leaves a mark, you know, and slavery just shifts to other modes, you know. Remember one of the things that we just read last week, that the Supreme Court of any state should be guaranteeing, is that you don't get taxation enslavement of the citizenry by the state.
You really
that you don't have an income tax. Right, where you're working for this, you know, all your labor is for the state, and the state, well, it might find in its magnanimity to give you a little crumb or something, but fundamentally, it's all of your income is theirs. Right, I mean, that's the fundamental assumption behind the income taxes. It's the government's, the state's money that you're earning, and then they redistribute it to you.
Distributing it to us more so than ever.
Well, there isn't 100% income tax. But
that's pretty high.
But still, but you just remember, I mean, the whole point is it shouldn't be anything. Right? It's a false concept. Right? Okay? Because it's, you know, we should have, you know, you're supposed to be leaving slavery behind in all forms, like you're just pointing out. And instead, it just, you know, you think you've left slavery behind. We're all this high-minded. No, you've just shifted it to some other mode.
Hide it in the paperwork.
As soon as you got rid of physical slavery, you know, in the latter half of the 19th century, you instituted economic slavery in the beginning of the 20th.
Yeah. You said the word expanding before we went off onto it. And so I'm just reminding you of the
way that you... No, I was going to get back to that. Yes, thank you. All right, so one thing that I was going to bring up with the number eight there, decisive conquests. You know, I told you that they were in a very aggressive expansion mode once they had established this Iroquois Federation and took over a big chunk of territory. But it wasn't decisive conquest. They couldn't hold it. In very short order, it all started to melt away again. You know, and they were almost all the way back to just there in New York, you know, prior to you know, the establishment of the United States.
Like number five.
Mm-hmm.
Definite territory.
Yeah, right. They needed cities and organizations.
Right, and seeing that whole bit about, you know, again, it's very difficult to establish you know, definitive cities and definite territory and all this, you know, when private, you don't have private property. Right? So it all kind of works together. See, it's just, it's too fuzzy. It can't be brought into rigid enough, precise state to be, pardon the pun, see, a state.
And the pioneers brought all these points to this country,
mm-hmm.
except for the slave. Well, no, the slavery was happening too.
Yeah. But,
can I say one thing about the slavery?
Yeah, yeah.
In the war, I really do appreciate that we needed that and maybe need some. But from where I stand, it is repulsive and I don't really want to think too much about it. Like, I would never want to take part in that.
One of the things that's helpful for us today, right? I mean, you know, none of us, you know, have any inclination to want to reestablish slavery, and rightfully so. But a lot of us do struggle with a guilt about the fact that there once was slavery.
I don't think I feel guilty.
I mean, and even if you don't, you know that many do.
Yeah.
You know that many do. And the Revelators are trying to help us in that regard. It's like, stop that. Okay, it's an indispensable part, right? It's not some existential evil. It's an evolutionary good. Yes, a very passing evolutionary good, but an evolutionary good nonetheless. Know it as that, and let go of all your, you know, guilt about it. Okay? You know, you don't have to somehow, you know, you make reparations for this. Okay? For your eternal blackness, you know, as you were saying, darkness that you allowed in yourself, and you know, now you have inherited sin from those times, you know. Again, it kind of gets into the whole fall of man and original sin sort of thinking, right? Okay, so
we're making crime retroactive.
All right. Well, what else do we have here? You know, remember we talked a lot about domesticating animals, see, you know, as one of those key things. See, and they didn't even have that element. We haven't gotten to the family thing yet. That's coming up, you know, way forward. But, you know, when we eventually get to the marriage and family papers, you know, we'll read this little paragraph. The stupendous change from the mother family to the father family is one of the most radical and complete right about face adjustments ever executed by the human race. This change led at once to greater social expression and increased family adventure.
From the mother family?
And, you know, we won't get into the science of that right now. That's for that paper way up there. But the key thing, you know, why didn't they continue to progress? Why did it collapse? Well, in one way or another, all these things must have something to do with there couldn't be enough directionality, right? That's the contrast, like they were just pointing out in that little sentence I read. You had direction. It may not have been great direction. It seemed like a great idea at the time. You know, we all know how this works. But it was directioned. It didn't have this tendency to just become stagnant in place. It was going to go somewhere. Maybe not with the greatest results, but you know, you get an experimental energy going.
It's voltage.
Right. Okay. So it's
a capacitor. It just sits there, but it's not till it powers a load that it's going somewhere.
Yeah. So again, it's so often it's these. See, remember, because they said it's wholly automatic. All this stuff, right? So it's these very basic things like place, direction, differential between females and males. Yeah, you can usually answer the question, well, why number four, for instance, if you just reflect a little bit on the most basic things that you know, and you go, oh, okay, that's obvious. Okay. All right.
How come I don't know what they mean by nephew inheritance?
Because the mother family is a long ways away in the past. And you're going, wow, how does that work? Let me think. Right. Right. I mean, doesn't it just feel like, it's like, how could you get a direction going and keep a direction going like that? Isn't it just like going to be going, yeah, see, that's the thing. See, it's all directions and it just, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll read all about that. There's, you know, a whole bunch of that in the Marriage and Family Papers.
Yep. I don't have direction. Like, I'm the most undirection person on earth. Mm-hmm. Does that mean I'm just sitting in a static place and everyone's going and I'm being left behind?
No. See, again, because we aren't island universes, we're all caught up in a movement that is the evolutionary process. And, it's just whether or not you allow yourself to be caught up in that. There's lots of directional energy, so you will move forward with it unless you use a lot of will to just, become a hermit and completely isolate yourself. Okay.
Could get shredded that way.
Okay. They throw in this little transitional paragraph. Let's get that.
The red men were too democratic. They had a good government, but it failed. Eventually, they would have evolved a state, and had they not prematurely encountered the more advanced civilization of the white man, who was pursuing the governmental methods of the Greeks and the Romans.
Okay, so here's where, post those eight bullet points, they're giving you kind of the big picture like I was doing a little bit. It's like, okay, what is it about red man in general that might be an issue here? Well, he favors the sixth adjutant. All right? And so he favors unity consciousness. That's the fundamental issue. Why is he too democratic? See, because he favors his unity consciousness too much. And he can't help it. He's not going to be able to feel comfortable with a republic. He's going to tend to a pure democracy. He's going to try to live the ideal instead of wisely bring down the ideal to an idea that practically meets the facts of individuality and diversity. And
so he could accept a chief while they were at war, but when they were at peace.
Right, it would get fuzzy, right? It's his spiritual consciousness that is fundamentally why this didn't work. And you can think about with each of those points, eight points, like to what degree does that bias to your unity consciousness, to his unity consciousness, play into why number one or number two or number three?
Yeah.
I'll leave that as a bit of an exercise for you to reflect on that. And then, of course, the other, the thing we all know, if you hadn't had white men beginning to trickle onto the North American continent, you wouldn't have had this external influence applied to this little experiment here. Maybe when they expanded, they could have kind of kept that going. It might have been a real kind of slow process. But immediately, they're having to back off because more powerful influences are coming into play.
It sounds like because they used the word prematurely to be countered, that they would have liked the development of the state.
Remember that there's another spot when they're talking about the red man where they say, they would have developed, a reasonable beginning civilization, if they had had enough time, but they just ran out of time to be alone and slowly build it up on their own.
So if they have had the time and developed at least the beginnings of statehood, and they would have been possibly on a more equal, able to integrate and...
Yeah. Well, we don't want to get too much into the red man, but it just Remember, there's just a whole bunch of factors. You know, one of the big things, there was so much internecine warfare that a lot of the higher strains were killed off. You know, they shot themselves in the foot in many ways. And there's just a number of things that made it so it just, you know, it just didn't happen. I mean, this wasn't the last time with the Iroquois that they tried to get it together. You know, we'll eventually get to Tenskwatawa too. But it just, you know, it couldn't last for a number of reasons. But they're right here, they're just pointing out, remember, we're just focusing mostly on the natural evolutionary thing. And so thinking about, there's only so much that evolution can do with a limited people, a circumscribed people, right? It's why Adam and Eve are supposed to blend all the races together into one race, because each of them has an Achilles heel. You know, each of the separate six races by themselves is going to come up against this self-limiting nature because they're not symmetric enough in their mind. You know, so
is that why they have different resurrection halls for each race?
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, again, related. I mean, they are so different in that you literally have to resurrect them in a different a different flavor of energy environment. You know, there's a certain energy environment on the first mansion world, and you have to downstep that into like six different dialects of that energy environment, right? Yeah. For them to be properly formed. Because they have to be formed initially a little bit asymmetric. Yeah. They can't be formed in the full symmetry because they aren't there yet.
And that eventually amalgamates, right?
Yeah, they eventually, yeah. Yeah. But to start with, yeah. Okay. So now they give us this list about, in contrast, what was it with that made the Roman state successful in contrast to the Iroquois Federation?
They were Italian. But are they Sicilian?
Well, I'm glad I'm only half Italian.
The successful Roman state was based on, one, the father family, two, agriculture and the domestication of animals, three, condensation of population, cities. Four, private property and land. Five, slavery, classes of citizenship. Six, conquest and reorganization of weak and backward peoples. Seven, definite territory with roads. Eight, personal and strong rulers.
Okay. Yeah, if you look closely, you'll see it, you've got the same eight elements. They're in a different order, but you can pair it all up. You know, fundamentally what they're saying is you just flip it to what the Iroquois had that led to failure, you know, okay, and then you've got what leads to success. But it is interesting to note what they put up front in the two. You know, the fact that, you know, and they mention that in other places, that, you know, that really difficult thing about private property. You know, Red Man just, you know, thought that was just so wrong, you know, that someone would own the land. You know, that just really struck them as just, you know, you know, way, way, way wrong. So that's why that ends up front. See? But it, you know, it's an essential part of statehood. And then look what's up front. See, with the Romans, the father family. So there you see that you know, you have that that dynamic factor of the father family, and of course the family is the nucleus of all the institutions, the whole civilization, right? I mean, if what needs to be the nucleus is not living. Is anything that you build out of it going to be living? No. Right? You don't take dead things and magically build living things, right, out of dead things. Right? You can only build living things out of living elements.
You can't get something from nothing.
You can't get something from nothing. Yep.
I'm looking at the group consciousness versus the more individual consciousness kind of tendencies in both of those. And if you look at, you know, the enslavement versus the conquest, you know, what did they do when they, you know, captured someone or won something, won over others, you know, the Roman state one, they reorganized them and you know, the weak and backward peoples.
Mm-hmm.
But in the more, you know, everybody needs to get along and balance and blend in easily. You know, if the captives blended in easily, they probably adopted them. And if they didn't blend in easily, they massacred them.
Yeah.
So, you know, which way you want someone to try to, you know, see you as an individual more and recognize that you're weak and backwards and try to work with you about that and reorganize you and blend, you know, help you to, you know, take some time to work with you, or just kill you.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're kind of teeing it up to, you know, one of the things that, now that you have these two lists, you can, okay, let's take it out of the historical fact mode, right? What's the truth that's flowing through this, right? I mean, you can see that they're trying to point out that the reason that we're studying a thing called the Urantia Book, why there's a fifth epical revelation on the planet, why there's an emergency, is that you have, unfortunately, too many unwise, spiritually activated individuals. You've got a bias to unity consciousness that is ripping everything apart. And that example that you just brought up, notice how when you have a bias to your unity consciousness, to your spiritual consciousness, how you immediately have a tendency to think in very black and white, stark terms. You either adopt them because we're all equal, or you kill them, right? There's no sophistication to try to set up an equity, right? The only word you got in your head is equality, you know? And, you know, and if it isn't natural that you can believe in this equality, if for no other reason it's a problematic data point, you need to just erase it. Right, so there's a very, very immediate tendency for someone who favors their unity consciousness to take it to the next level, you know, and you don't just have socialism, you know, which obviously, you know, you can, as you're pointing out, there's a collectivism mentality there because they favor, you know, a unity adjutant. You don't just have socialism, it goes to fascism. Right, that socialism is augmented into fascism. I mean, you can't get to fascism unless you favor your unity consciousness. Rugged individualists don't get to fascism. Right? They can't even get to socialism, let alone take it further to fascism. Right? I mean, it's always that desire for poor man's unity, uniformity, right, in those immature, spiritually conscious individuals that leads them to want to have, you know, one party, you know, and actively suppress any other party, you know, one mode of voice, and actively suppress, if not literally exterminate, all other voices. You know, people who favor their unity consciousness, when they get all amped up, you know, they immediately say, well, the way we need to deal with those people that think like that, we need to just kill them, right? I mean, you know, if you don't believe in neo-Darwinism, you should just be executed, Right? Thoughts like that. And see, it's only when you have that greater energy and desire to have this this vast phenomenon that you can get into this mode. If you want to be an island universe as this, you know, this very amped up individualist, right? I mean, you know, you don't have any of these huge collective problems that can result from that. But it's harder and harder to find anyone who is actually profoundly biased to their individuality consciousness. You know, kind of in a, you know, in this sort of amped up, more active mode. You know, very passive animal-like individuals, yes. But, you know, because of the spiritual uplift 2,000 years ago and then the evolution in the mind energy system that's occurred in the last few centuries, most people have a lot of unity consciousness coursing in their mind.
There's fewer and fewer frontiers where those rugged individuals can just go off and be by themselves.
And so again, it's these very things that, you know, on the one hand seem hopeful. It's like, oh, we've got both by bestowal from the fourth epical revelation and by evolution of the mind energy system, we have more spiritual consciousness. This is a fantastic thing. Yes and no, potentially, right? But the moment that you have a hold of spirit energy, you have a hold of a double-edged sword, and you have just as much destructivity potential as creativity potential, and it's real destructivity, not, you know, just material, real destructivity, finally. And that can produce an emergency if there's not the requisite wisdom to properly wield that spiritual sword. Know which blade to use.
I'm trying to think of an example of someone who is such an individual and viewed, you know, real strong personality or person who viewed others as weak and backwards. I mean, someone who took that to an extreme. I mean, I don't know, did Napoleon take that to an extreme? Or can you think of anybody who took that to an extreme? And really, you know...
Well, see, again, see, I mean, you know... Whether we're talking about Romans or Iroquois here, you know, we're talking about a collective expression. You've got unity consciousness that's leading to greater and greater associations.
So it's a group that tended to do that instead of just one person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a group phenomenon. let's see. It's like I was saying. I mean, if you really have a definitive individual, yeah, that's not a problem. Okay, you know, other than like what Gene was pointing out, if you no longer have a spot that they can just go off to all by themselves, and okay, then it can be a problem. But because then they want to build great big walls around their house in the middle of their suburb, you know, or something. But anyway, The one harsh thing I wanted to bring out again, we've seen how they're sort of replaying the fundamental elements that we've learned in the previous sections, previous papers. You know, they're putting them into play here, and you notice the extra element that they brought in about conquest and reorganization of weak and backward peoples. You know, when I went back and read the indispensable paragraph about slavery, I didn't read the final part because we hadn't gotten to the parallel, you know, and now we just did. The rest of that compound sentence is, it compelled backward and lazy peoples to work and thus provide wealth and leisure for the social advancement of their superiors. See, so they're right there in item number 6. See, they're reminding you of what they said in the indispensable paragraph, that key paragraph about slavery. It's not just slavery, but there's that element, you know, of, you know, really explaining why you get it's a net positive to begin with there, because those who can move have the opportunity, the freedom now to do that. Yes, it's on the backs of the slaves, but
they don't have anything better to do.
But yeah, I mean, that's just the way it works. I mean, you move on the back of a horse, right?
That's if you're not the slave.
Right. See, I mean, you just
sign me up.
I'm reminding you of that on the, you know, when I said on the back of the slaves, you know, to think of a literal thing of on the back of a horse, just to remind you of the basic physics of a material phenomenon, right? There's no magic to this. You can't sit on the back of nothing and ride across the plains. You got to sit on the back of an animal that you've made to serve you.
But look at the alternative, you know, of somebody coming in and getting you to work and getting you to, you know, do something productive. It's either that or allow you to, you know, die in a gutter. Starvation or something, because you couldn't get yourself together to, you know, get something to eat or stay out of the frozen whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, which way do you want to go? One's going toward the massacre direction, and the other one's going toward have someone else assist you in grouping your stuff and getting moving.
Yeah, I mean, think of a very simple example of that. You know, when the rebellion occurred 200,000 years ago, we lost that whole educational regime that was trying to teach us to not drink our sewage. Okay? And it took us 200,000 years to figure it out on our own. But only a handful of people on the planet figured it out. You know, and the rest of the planet was still clueless. Right? So like you're saying, I mean, those who finally figured that out after 200,000 years can go to those people who are literally still wallowing in their own sewage and try to, you know, you're going to have to kind of push them out of that state. You're not going to say a couple of wise words and they go, oh, I get it. I mean, if you could do that, they would have figured it out of themselves after 200,000 years. Right? You're going to have to lead them out of their sewage. And you can't just lead them out and then go away, because they'll fall right back into their sewage. You're going to have to keep leading them out of their sewage. Right? Because we know that fundamentally, you can't change this until you do what Adam and Eve are supposed to have done. Genetically blend everyone together and upstep it all. Because as long as we're still down low like that, you just can't put two and two together. You know, even some of the supposedly best of us, you know, like in Paris, France, right? You know, thought it was a great idea to have the water supply for the city below the sewage.
Wow, you guys are really on it.
Great idea, guys. You know, not to mention, you also have the catacombs. So the rainwater goes down through all the dead bodies, then down through the sewage, and then down into the drinking water.
Yeah.
And you wondered why bottled water started there. Okay. But see, so I mean, until very recent times, remember, this is really, really recent, that even the best on the planet couldn't see that was an issue. That maybe you shouldn't have the water be the lowest level in this whole subterranean city. Yeah, so, you know, we're quite dense in this regard. Okay, so you get the basic idea. You have these two sets of eight, and they're just in a parallel, but not a simple parallel because they're reordered. But it's just showing how you have to flip all eight of those. See, it's a system. You can't just flip one of them. You got to flip all eight of them. And that was just way too much of a task for the Iroquois, for Red Man to do. He might have been able to flip one, but all eight of them? Okay. Now, this next paragraph is going to, again, be very relevant. We talked about this a lot. Again, one of the fundamental problems of an untempered favoritism to your spiritual consciousness leads to.
The great weakness in Roman civilization and a factor in the ultimate collapse of the empire was the supposed liberal and advanced provision for the emancipation of the boy at 21 and the unconditional release of the girl so that she was at liberty to marry a man of her own choosing or to go abroad in the land to become immoral. The harm to society consisted not in these reforms themselves, but rather in the sudden and extensive manner of their adoption. The collapse of Rome indicates what may be expected when a state undergoes too rapid extension associated with internal degeneration.
Okay, so, where do you, where's the doorway amidst all those historical facts? Which sentence is the immediate doorway from those facts to the truth that flows through that paragraph? Right. The harm to society consisted not in these reforms themselves, right? It's not because you didn't have valid spiritual consciousness recognizing higher ideals, but rather in the sudden and extensive manner of their adoption. What do we want? Fill in the blank. When do we want it now? The fact that spiritual consciousness has no notion of time, and if it's informed of time, it hates it. Right? Because it wants, to just be in eternity. It wants to think existentially, not temporally.
It's funny you should say that, because oftentimes many of us have some really good ideas in life about things, and it's just at the wrong timing of it. Many times we're way ahead of ourselves, and geez, if I'd only done that 10 years later.
Hence, yes.
Now.
Yes.
And it's kind of interesting how timing really is a major factor in so many things.
It causes so much calamity. Someone has a great idea, but they will not wait the 5 years when it could be introduced into the SIP system without any disruption. No, they want it right now, and they blow up everything because of it. Right? It happens. Right. That's just the poster child of it.
Yeah.
But it happens at every scale. Anytime you have someone who's favoring their unity consciousness, it can be in the most trivial modes of human interassociation, right? That they just blow up the whole integrity of the group because they have a valid idea, but they need to wait 5 years. And they can't. They will not. Time is an affront to the validity of their ideal.
Jesus waited for the timing of everything in his
life. Right. Because
there are the other sides of things when you have to act.
Yes.
How should we say it? Not just intelligence, but it's an experiential understanding.
Right. You have to have a wisdom. I mean, it may be that the time to act is right now. It's not, now is not evil. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. Right. The proper time may actually be right now. But, you need to consider other times.
You've got to get me to the hospital right away.
And again, it's always,
I'm playing golf.
Back in the next year.
Yeah.
where this, you know, where this is relevant to this, you know, what we're studying here with the Revelation is, you know, it's when it's this improper relationship between the spiritual and the material, the eternal and the temporal, and it's not improper material things that lead to an emergency on a planet. You know, it's this improper downstepping of ideals to ideas that leads to an emergency, right? Not downstepping a pure democracy ideal to a republic idea. The examples are endless. You know, they just gave you a little example here, just a little curious one. And pointing out the great weakness in Roman civilization. See? And if you study the fall of Rome, you know, they kind of hinted at it by pointing out that, has the liberty to marry a man of her own choosing, or, that's what comes after the or, you know, that was a huge problem, right? Because if you corrupt the by grace, you know, literally mammal integrity of a female, of the females, then you collapse family, which means you collapse everything that's built upon the nucleus that is the family, and that rocks the cradle, still fraternizes with destiny. You break that, and that state ceases to have a destiny. It falls. All right, so, and remember, when we get to the marriage and family papers, we'll come back around to that issue, right? That womankind is now, experiencing her great test.
Right? Here come the barbarians.
They actually used the word immoral there instead of
ethical. Yes, they did.
Yeah. Yep. So it means more than just this.
That's why I threw in the hand that rocks the cradle, still fraternal, right? This has a relationship to the cosmos, element to it, right? She's becoming the seed for the disruption of the synchronization of the civilization to the cosmos. If a civilization doesn't conform to the cosmos, it's not upheld by the cosmos, and it falls. Right? The upholder can only uphold that which is like her. Right? There has to be some universal harmony embodied in that structure, or it passes through her hand and falls. Okay. So that's what they're getting at. You know, your moral duty is your duty to the cosmos, your conformity with the cosmos. So that's why they purposely threw that in. You could easily miss that, see, if you hadn't really picked up on the meaning of moral. You think, oh yeah, that's what moral means. It's that violating the sexual taboos. It's like, no. Yep, go ahead.
The embryonic state was made possible by the decline of the blood bond in favor of the territorial. And such tribal federations were usually firmly cemented by conquest, while a sovereignty that transcends all minor struggles and group differences is the characteristic of the true state. Still, many classes and castes persist in the later state organizations as remnants of the clans and tribes of former days. The later and larger territorial states had a long and bitter struggle with these smaller consanguineous clan groups, the tribal government proving a valuable transition from family to state authority. During later times, many clans grew out of trades and other industrial associations.
Okay, we already sort of talked about that way up front, that, when we were thinking about the single nation, common language, mores, and institutions. Yes, but that doesn't mean there isn't diversity. Okay. You know, and they're reminding that you inescapably have that diversity because you can't just melt away the vestiges of clans and tribes, if nothing else. But right at the end there, they're pointing out that even when you do melt away, like, literal consanguineous clan phenomenon, you have effectively clans that crop up in other modes. Now, in the same way that you don't just have physical power, you have mindful power and spiritual power, right? I mean, there is, you know, there are many different ways that a given truth can be expressed factually. So they're just trying to emphasize that, you know, and especially the larger the state gets and the more sophisticated the state gets, right, there has to be ever greater sublime wisdom to be able to construct a stable system to handle all of that diversity. You know, and having people willfully saying, no, everyone is born equal. There is no real diversity. You know, it just all happens naturally because everyone is born equal. And then, of course, at the same time, you know, they schizophrenically turn around and, you know, and are constantly throwing out that diversity word and wanting to have multiculturalism. And it's like, okay, which is it? You know, see, again, there's so little logic. There's just emotion, you know, and animation. There isn't reflection. And so, you know, so many of these people have, you know, in the span of a few moments are inconsistent and they don't even recognize it. You know, they literally say opposite things. You know, so.
You know, failure, in many ways, success is more difficult to manage than failure.
Yeah, yeah.
And a society that's successful
can become complacent.
Become complacent, yep. Yes.
Yes.
And just assume that success is automatic.
Right. Just, you know, yeah. But like I always point out, you know, yes, they said the beginning, you know, in many ways is automatic, but the farther you get into a vaster and more complex state, the more and more it is, you know, it is not automatic. You know, it has to be very actively understood and maintained you know, taught to the next generation. At the moment, you know, anyone takes it for granted, that generation that's taking it for granted is going to be the last generation with any reasonable integrity to their civilization. It's all going to start collapsing.
And in schools, as we're raising kids, at least in this country, I'm not sure that our students are getting the history taught to them, so they have strong underpinnings for our culture
going. No, we want to actually erase our history because it's innately evil, should never be thought of again. Oh. Right. I mean, it's just, you know, we all know, you could just go on for hours and hours. Everywhere you turn, you can see we're doing exactly the opposite of the truths that the revelators are trying to teach us. You know, and again, I'll just remind everyone, if it wasn't in every direction, in every place you looked, there wouldn't be a fifth epical revelation. If it wasn't systemic like that, right? You don't mobilize super universe individuals to give an epical revelation because there's some little vicissitude on some dirt ball in the universe of universes, right? It has to be a full-on, 100% systemic collapse potential that's in play. You know, and so that's how you really, it's one of the ways you know that this is what it says it is. Right? The fact that when you actually open your eyes and start looking, it's like, well, I'll be dang, now that I look at it, it is in every place and every direction I look, isn't it? Yeah? It's an emergency. It's a holistic emergency. It's a philosophic emergency. Right? It's everywhere you turn. We are really confused. and willfully doing things very unfortunate, exact opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. Okay, let's wrap it up here with this final paragraph.
Failure of state integration results in retrogression to pre-state conditions of governmental techniques, such as the feudalism of the European Middle Ages. During these dark ages, the territorial state collapsed, and there was a reversion to the small castle groups, the reappearance of the clan and tribal stages of development. Similar semi-states even now exist in Asia and Africa, but not all of them are evolutionary reversions. Many are the embryonic nucleuses of states of the future.
So the last little part, and we've mentioned it, we always remind ourselves of how, you know, we've got everyone in every state from beginning to, you know, pushing towards advancing. But that oft-repeated thing aside, you know, what's that paragraph basically about? Huh, it follows exactly. What's the next thing that you say after what I was just saying about the preceding paragraph?
Yeah, great.
Right.
Lovely.
It's the interregnum. Right.
Retrogression.
Right. Right. The territorial state will collapse. Right. And there will be a reversion, right, back to, right. There will be another Dark Ages.
What will we have instead of castles?
We're going to need castles.
I want a castle with a moat.
Walls and moats and elevators.
You know, I mean, remember, you know, if you want to be kind of a little more precise, the whole enslavement, taxation enslavement, that's the feudal system. That's being a serf.
Yeah.
That's serfdom. No. You know, so you see they just roll it out in a very logical order, and the bottom line is why are we wanting you to reflect on all this, take 2 hours to do, you know, these, you know, not even two pages in the Arantia book. Because this is very important. This is why you should be reflecting on this revelation. It's here for only one reason. It's not here to give you all the details of Jesus' life. It's not here, you know, to give you better paleontology, etc. You know, it's here for you to recognize the truths of the whole, because the whole is in jeopardy. I mean, the truths of Jesus' life are part of the truths of the whole. The truths of paleontology are part of the truths of the whole. Right? All of that comes together into a holistic cosmic consciousness that doesn't collapse. It's a cosmic consciousness. It's like the cosmic upholder, the cosmic mother. Right? It rests on her hand. It doesn't pass through her hand. That which is just material or just spiritual passes through her hand and falls. Only that which is like her is upheld. We have to be cosmic. They're trying to give us what we need in every way, shape, and form to have that wholeness so that we don't fall, that we continue to be holdable. And as long as we're holdable, we'll be upheld and we won't fall. But if we choose to not be holdable, there's no magic. We won't be held. We won't be upheld. Okay. All right. So it starts. It starts with you, the cosmic citizen. See, they're telling you, it's like, well, if you really don't have a very integrous state, you're a citizen of a greater state. All right. Identify as a citizen there, be an integrous citizen there, and if there's enough of you do that, it'll redound to the local state, and the state will endure. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not helping. I have to pay taxes on Monday. Income taxes.
Yeah, yeah. The tension
and
builds.
I don't have the wherewithal to do it. I'm going to
figure it out. Okay, anyway.
You should borrow from the state.
We will we'll continue forward here with this next time. There's lots and lots of very, very relevant material, as you can see here. We're a state, and this is talking about the integrity of statehood. All right, let's take a moment, everyone.